Blog Talk Radio.
People don't have a quality and capability to overcome tests and difficulties as well, to transcend them, right? Mm-hmm. It doesn't mean that we're supposed to deny oppression and the injustices that happen. And that's not my intention of even stating that. But that the oppression is not what defines a person, right? And so when I say visibilizing inherent nobility, what is actually the qualities, what are those high qualities, those spiritual qualities that don't need to be measured by how many, you know, quantitative statistics are out there of how these people in communities are working through what they're going through, the oppression and injustices that still continue and persist and exist, right, that has not ended. Mm-hmm. But what does that look like to also raise those issues, you know, not just talk about the fact, like Trevor Noah has this joke, it's a small bit he does about the UNICEF infomercials about this fly, and he says, why is it that in every infomercial there's this poor child from, you know, the African continent, and all of a sudden there's this fly like lingering right around the mouth, and he's like, I've tried really hard and I've never been able to get a fly on top of my mouth like that. You know, and you said, but there's this perception that you have to make, you have to present this image of helplessness, of vulnerability to the point that that's the only way that someone can connect. And to me, that doesn't see us as equals, right? It sees someone as, I need to save them, I need to help those people kind of thing. And so I think this idea of looking at people as noble is just something that I was like, wait a minute. I think this is something that I need to work on, but also this idea of what does it mean when we recognize, you know, each other's nobility as well.
Yeah, so much of that resonates with me. I'm trying to, like, pull different threads, but my academic work on transnational testimonials is very much about that and thinking about life writing narratives that are, you know, many are coming from the global South, although I understand there are many Souths, right? So it's not just, you know, how we are kind of taught to think about it, but there's many flows of power. But these forms of life writing as social interventions that are also insistent on look at all of me, look at all of the pieces, right? Not just like this kind of story that you want to tokenize or market or turn into a commodity, but all of the complexity and the paradox. And when I was working on that story, and it's interesting how this is dropping in because Haiti just experienced this earthquake this past weekend, and I was writing when the 2010 earthquake hit, and Edwige Danticat's work, she's Haitian American, I was really engaging with that work a lot, and she was asked to come on to be interviewed, and she thought she was coming on to be interviewed, like, she's a MacArthur scholar, she's writing all of these pieces, she's thinking about these things, and then when she showed up, she was kind of framed as the quote-unquote native informant, and she wasn't asked about, like, what do you think about these things, like, what's your perspective, it was how do you feel, you know, how is your family, you know, and it's not that those questions aren't important, but that she was kind of, when I hear, you know, your framing on the panel, and you're like, oh, is that why I'm here? Like, that's not my understanding of why I'm here. I really kind of hear resonance with watching that play out. Like, I just turned on, you know, the television, watched the news, and there she was. And then to hear some of that struggle that she named after that of, like, how she was being framed. Yeah. So I guess I'll just share that I also have a history with intimate partner violence, and I know we talked about this a little bit, but it was something very similar where someone kind of held up a mirror to me and was like, hey, you do social justice work, which is in many ways and the kind of more full expression about recognizing everyone's inherent nobility. Why don't you recognize your own? And that was really hard for me to hear, and that was really uncomfortable for me to hear. And in my work with somatic coaching, I've come to understand that this is also a classic trauma response, right? Or those of us who are aware of these, you know, structural injustices, we don't want to take away from other people's experiences. And so sometimes it can be like, oh, but my experience in relation to this is so small. But that also creates a strange hierarchy, even if it's like an inverted hierarchy. And the language that I've come to use for what I hear you describing through the Baha'i faith, which would be like a just kind of adjacent or analogous to you, is this higher self, right? Like, so I have this human self, I have these identities, I have this like life path, but I'm also multidimensional, right? And I do have this higher self and this higher calling and this higher soul purpose. And to recognize the ways in which I wasn't honoring that was really painful, honestly. And I guess I'm wondering if you could just share, you know, how did you come to understand that this inherent worthiness, like, how did you connect the dots, I'm wondering, between, like, your personal experience, your spirituality, and your therapist being like, hey, why don't you practice this? And just what that experience was like for you having that mirror held up.
Yeah, it was definitely humbling. You know, and you sharing about your own experiences and talking about how painful it was to, it's funny because, you know, there's this thing of you just totally forget yourself. And I think often when it comes to being in an abusive relationship, you learn, if you haven't already learned it before being in an abusive relationship because of other forms of socialization, that make us more prone to kind of stay in those kind of relationships. It's like this reinforcing belief that you do not have value and that you do not matter. And so you forget that. So when someone tells you that, it was really humbling because I said, oh my goodness, it reminded me, she had, you know, I have ovarian cancer. And so I'm in remission right now, but I really did not want to have this procedure because I really wanted to have children. So I didn't want to face the risk of having to have anything removed in case, because you have to sign a waiver that just in case, you know, certain organs must be removed in the process to give consent. And my therapist was like, if you're so committed to justice and all this, you have to be alive to be able to do that, she said. And I said, wow. You know, it's kind of like, that's so true. You know, and she's like, there are many ways to love children, you know, and so it's like, it kind of reminded me of that thing of not thinking about my commitment to justice in terms of beyond the self at this point. It was so inward at that point. But then looking at this idea of nobility and seeing like, what is it, you know, what does it mean to actually recognize my own, because it's almost feeling hypocritical. You're not fully understanding what justice is if you're not practicing it within first, right? It's kind of like, what kind of hypocrite am I, you know, in those kind of things. And it's interesting you mentioned Edwige Dendekind's work, because one thing I remember in an interview when she was saying the reason why she likes to write about Haiti, about the people in this story, is just because people only hear or visibilize Haiti when there's a coup or a natural disaster. You know, like even after hearing the news of the earthquake, which followed the assassination, right, that happened of the president, and I was just like, Haiti can't catch a break. And that's like what I was saying, because I was so frustrated about all the trauma and the damage narrative that you constantly hear. It doesn't mean that it's not a reality that has historical implications, right?
Right.
But it was just like, wow. And it's the same with Syria. If you Google Syria, all you see is images of war. And Afghanistan, what's happening, right? You know, there's something everywhere you notice that there's this kind of even highly profiling Black faces, right, as being criminalized within the United States and even within databases in the police system. And so this idea of if I believe that everyone is inherently, you know, noble, then I have to look within and be like, hold up, I need to do work on myself to see what that really looks like, because if I don't do that work, then it's not complete, then I don't really see people as noble because I'm not starting within, you know. It's kind of that whole, like, deeds, not words, you know, and not beginning and ending with words. I have to actually strive to be and do this on a regular basis. And when I went through that abusive relationship and all the different experiences, I felt like my spirit was, like, I had no spirit. I didn't want to live. I did attempt to take my own life, and I immediately called a friend who came and stayed with me, you know, assured my, and I called my parents, which was strange. I would have never thought to do that, but I called my parents, and my mom came on the first flight that she could. And watching my mom scrub blood out of the bathtub was just, it really hit me.
Yeah.
It was like, wait a minute, this whole idea of the spiritual implications of, like, damage to the body doesn't only affect one, like, an individual soul, but it affects every soul that you're connected with. And so it was really, really humbling for me to be like, this is not just limited to myself, but it has to start with me.
Yeah. Yeah. Sahara, I just want to name, I really appreciate that, just the vulnerability that you bring to your work, right? Because, I mean, these really are stories that in different iterations, of course, people have resonance with, and there can be so much shame attached to just sharing it. And, you know, one of the reasons, funnily enough, that I left academia was because I was very aware that I wasn't taking care of myself. And I ended up having a full hysterectomy and oophorectomy. I had a PMDD, which is just, now I understand that as an ancestral imbalance. There's, like, a lot of rage and trauma in my body. And that wake-up call where someone was like, hey, you need to take care of yourself too, similar to, like, if you want to do this work, you have to be around for it. It kind of flipped that switch for me, and I was like, oh, inner flows outer, right? Like, if I want to be doing this work, I need to change my relationship with myself, and that changes the energy that I'm then putting out in the world. And it also models, right, this other way that, like, yes, right, we can take care of ourselves, and in fact that is a form of resistance to the system, and not self-care as in, like, just, you know, bubble baths and spa days. Self-care is in, like, I'm not texting anyone back today, you know, as in, like, I'm going to establish some boundaries and really ask, like, my mind and my heart and my soul and my spirit, you know, what I need right now. So we are about to take a break, but when we come back to Heart Change Consciousness, we're going to talk more about the connection between spirituality and justice. And, you know, some of the limiting ways in which these things become artificially separated in conversations. So I hope you'll come back.
It takes courage to breathe.
Hi, I'm Patricia McNair, host of Divine Guidance with Patricia. And I'm here to help you live a more authentic, spiritually connected life. Join me every first and third Wednesday at 9 a.m. Pacific on TransformationTalkRadio.com. Being who you are in everyday life is the key to unlocking soul wisdom within that our whole self already knows. Get ready to embrace your spiritual, mental, and emotional well-being, your whole being. Discover your gifts and strengthen your connection to spirit. We will explore earth guidance, divine truth and love, past life lessons, and so much more. So listen in to Divine Guidance with Patricia and join in your personal adventure to triggering, opening, validating, and being all that you are. For more information about me, visit divineguidance.earth.
Champion Your Life with me, Leanne Champion. First Wednesdays at 1 p.m. Pacific Time on TransformationTalkRadio.com. That new gym membership might help you get fit, but what about emotional fitness? Jump into the rushing waters of personal growth. Don't waste another minute feeling unfulfilled. Visit championyourlife.com and let's do this together.
It's time to get your life back on Burn Bright Today with Jennifer Marcinelli. Tune in each month on TransformationTalkRadio.com. Learn to move from the darkness of burning out to the light of burning bright. Jennifer is redefining stress and the energetic causes of burnout, shining a light on process to get your life back. For more information about Jennifer and her work, visit burnbrighttoday.com.
Tune in to The Truth Is Funny with Colette Stephan each Wednesday at 8 a.m. Pacific, 11 a.m. Eastern on TransformationTalkRadio.com. This hit show will have you thinking outside the box and riding the wave of infinite potential. Join Colette on the Higher Self Network, inspiring listeners to shine their brilliance and ensure success while roaring with laughter as they recognize the humor of the giant cosmic joke. Visit TheTruthIsFunny.com.
Join Jennifer Noelle Taylor on the hit show Quantum Touch Radio, supercharging your life on TransformationTalkRadio.com. You'll take a quantum journey as well as reveal powerful yet simple steps to create more abundance, better health, emotional and mental vibrancy, and happier relationships using universal quantum touch principles. For more information, visit QuantumTouch.com.
Healing has a ripple effect. One person's healing affects everyone around them. This is where the power of sharing our stories can be so important. Tune in to Playing on the Edge Radio with Megan Edge each month on Transformation Talk Radio as Megan provides you with ways of sustaining radical and powerful changes in your life. Enact the power of radical change. To find out more about Megan Edge, visit her website at meganedge.ca.
Hello, all. Thank you for joining us on Heart Change Consciousness. I'm your host, Dr. Trish DeRocher, and I'm here today with Dr. Sahar D. Satrazadeh discussing the limitations of trauma-focused narratives for addressing the lived experiences of historically oppressed groups. And why social paradigms that define people in terms of victim and survivor frameworks really limit the spiritual expression and in Dr. Sahar's words, the inherent nobility of the human lives that they seek to honor. So Sahar, just in having this discussion, I'm really reminded of the work of Tarana Burke, who's the founder of the Me Too movement. And I want to name that Tarana Burke founded the Me Too movement years before it was picked up. And in many ways, she was left behind in kind of current iterations of it. But in more recent interviews, Tarana Burke talks about the limited value of trauma-centered narratives and has kind of been very explicit that, like, yes, the Me Too movement is important, but not as an end point, just as an opening to get the conversation started. So there was a New York Times interview with her just a couple of years ago on kind of the next iteration of her project, moving away from just the trauma-centered accounts to, like, okay, what are people doing to heal themselves after being harmed by intimate partner violence? And one of the things she talks about in here is not just like leaning into the trauma or getting stuck in the trauma, but, you know, she talks about leaning into the joy and actually kind of expanding and creating more joy in our lives as a form of resistance. But of course, also just as a means of surviving and thriving, right? Like, thriving mm-hmm. is a form of resistance to structures who don't want you to exist. So In your piece that we've been discussing, you describe this concept of constructive resilience. And so I hear a lot of parallels in that and what Tarana Burke lays out. And I guess I just want to name that I think sometimes there can be this I watch it with my clients. I've watched it with my students over the years. Like, there's so much trauma in the world. How can I feel joy? Isn't it unethical to feel joy, right? Or to be happy when I know this other thing is happening? And for me, for my spiritual practice, it's about the both and like holding on to that complexity and that both of these can coexist, and we don't have to kind of be in a binary to either just fully focus on one or the other. But I'm wondering how you kind of understand, the importance of joy and what you mean by constructive resilience.
Yeah, I think that's a great question. Joy is something that we all need, right? We all need to have joy. And I think joy accompanies justice, even though justice demands a lot of arduous labor. It is painful. It is frustrating. It's angering. It's fatiguing. But it also has, the reason why justice matters is because I think the joy, you know, that is there. And I think even having joy and experiencing joyfulness and happiness, even in times of hardship and difficulty and trauma, and like you mentioned, that we're not only unidimensional beings, right? So it's okay to have pain and anger, but also to have joy. It's okay to be frustrated and sad, but also to be happy and to want to, you know, experience this contentment. And with regards to talking about this idea of constructive resilience, I didn't come up with the term. It actually, and it has goes by many names, but it just emerged as this idea of, from the international Baha'i community, this idea of describing communities that have endured oppression, systematic oppression, and finding ways to transcend obstacles into opportunities as exemplary of constructive resilience. Mm-hmm. And one thing that you often notice among communities that are, you know, disenfranchised, marginalized, communities of color in particular, there's this, you know, resentment of resilience discourse. You know, you'll read on Twitter, you know, one thing that I've been following a lot of people, I'm just tired of being resilient. I'm tired of being, like, it's supposed to be in our DNA because we come from a particular community or group, racial, ethnic group, an indigenous community that, or, you know, a certain part of the globe, right, the global south, or coming from, or we are women, or we are non-gender conforming. We come from this marginalized identity group, and we're supposed to be resilient. We're supposed to perform resilience because we are marginalized and disenfranchised. And what's interesting is, I think what constructive resilience does, it's this idea that you are not bouncing back from or going back to a place of where you were before the trauma, but you're actually being able to move through it in a way that is to benefit yourselves and your community in a constructive, productive way towards progress of yourselves and your community. And Tarana Burke's, you know, intent of not wanting to focus on this, you know, trauma-centered narrative and damage, because that's what people are doing. People are looking at the Me Too movement a lot as a collection or accumulation of victims, right? And there's totally misunderstanding of deeper context of misogyny, of heteropatriarchy, of racism, you know, of all these different intersections of classism that come into play. But it reminds me also of Eve Tuck's work. She, you know, over a decade ago, she wrote this letter to communities called Suspending Damage about how do we, you know, see ourselves in our communities as damaged all the time, and why don't we actually put that on pause and also consider images of desire and how we would like to be perceived. And those images of desire end up being synonymous with humanized, you know, images. How do we appear to be more human and humanized? How is our humanity centered? So with issues like constructive resilience, you know, Gerald Wiesner uses, whose indigenous scholar talks about survivance, which is this idea of not only being a survivor, but also being this able to how indigenous communities have intergenerationally been, you know, able to not only transcend and persist through the obstacles and the oppression, the systematic oppression that the community face, but they're doing things for the community, language, you know, knowledge production in terms of healing and health and well-being and values. There's all these different things that communities are doing to varying degrees to show that we are not just resilient. We're actually, you know, moving forward and we're intergenerationally thinking, we're sustainable thinking, but we're also believing in this idea of our futurism, you know, our future generations, and not only starting and ending with ourselves. So, you know, there are so many examples I can think of. Even Imani Perry, when you talk about joy, last summer there was a piece she wrote in The Atlantic called Racism is Terrible, Blackness is Not. Mm-hmm. And talking about those of you who see as protest, you know, we can also dance, we can also celebrate, and we also sing, and it's an act of insistence, you know, that we are not only still here, but we can still be human, we can still have joy. And she was basically saying, and those of you who are not, you know, a part of our community can also enjoy and celebrate that with us and not see it as something, you know, impossible or distinct or separate from us. And so this idea of constructive resilience, it's funny because when you think of this, I mean, there's so many examples. It makes me think of, like, going back to Syria. A lot of people don't know about the story in Madaya where a first-year dental student and a veterinarian were basically in the city that was locked up. You know, it was under control by Hamas and also the Syrian rebels, Syrian government, where basically no medical supplies can go in, no food can come in, and you have over 40,000 residents in the city of Madaya. And because there are hundreds and hundreds of landmines that are surrounding the city, there's also so many injuries, but there's also bombing from overhead. So there's no medical, you know, personnel, they end up fleeing because of threats to their lives. And then you have this veterinarian and this dental student step up to perform operations that they've never done before in their lives, all through this mobile phone network on WhatsApp with Syrian Americans using a cell phone. And to me, that's an act of constructive resilience. What is something you could do within this? And that's a story that people don't talk about, right? That's like, that's something about Syria we don't talk about. We don't talk about this concept of sumud, where Palestinian women, you know, are using issues, you know, they're using sisterhood, but also spiritual concepts of maternity and motherhood and community to be able to show how important communities must thrive, you know, whether it's through food and language and education. Like, there's this constant persistence in terms of an insistence. It's like what Audra Simpson says, it's a refusal or a denial or rejection to think that we don't have the capacity to even move through this and still be living, not just surviving, right, and not just enduring, but also living, and that we have the capacity to do that. And I think that's what this idea of having this inherent nobility, you know, I believe that there's a connection within the soul that allows us to move beyond the physical, emotional, mental damage, but there's also this capacity of the heart and soul that we need to also bring into play to help, you know, balance and complement that. So I understand that resilience on its own is often contested and problematized, and I think it's nice for us to think of what are ways that we can reimagine what resistance and even resilience means in response to oppression.
Yeah, I mean, those are all such powerful examples. I guess I'm just going back. Like, I learned what joy looks and feels like in activist spaces. Right? I remember a student was trying to understand, why do you protest? I was like, well, sometimes it's just being in community with people, right? Like, there's all of the challenges of the struggles and you know, organizing, and as you were talking about, like, the fatigue and, like, you know, when is this going to stop? Like, how many generations? And there's those moments, those really heart-based moments in them where, you know, that kind of soul-to-soul, you're working towards that justice and recognizing each other's inherent nobility. Mm-hmm. We are almost out of time, Sahar. I want to turn to just think about just some of the challenges of doing social justice work, you know, from a spiritual perspective within a spiritual structures such as higher education. And my understanding of the Baha'i faith is that justice and spirituality are kind of inherently interlinked. And so I'm wondering, you know, just if you can talk about how spirituality, and maybe that's incorrect, but how spirituality informs your praxis and some of the limitations or challenges that you find and some ways that you also work with these paradoxes.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, so I definitely believe that justice is a noble quality. And I think it's something that is felt in the soul. You know, I don't think it's something that it's only triggered by this physical sense or mental, intellectual sense of what justice is, that it pulls at the heart and the soul, and you just feel it, and sometimes you can't explain it. Because there's also critiques of what justice isn't, right, and what it demands, what it requires, and how it's misused and often fetishized. What, like, we hear the term social justice used often.
Right.
What does it mean? You know, what does that mean? What does that look like? We can talk about requiring it from others, but how are we practicing it in terms of how we even require it or demand it even for ourselves? Mm-hmm. And so, like, systems and structures like higher education, which is funny, you know, I studied critical university studies, you know, but I'm working within the system at the same time, and I'm constantly finding myself at war, like, mentally, with this idea of being in a space that is so oppressive on so many different levels, but I'm working within it, you know, and there's this hypocrisy. But if I look at systems and structures as networks of minds and hearts, and those minds and hearts are at varying degrees in terms of where their intentions are at, or even where their spiritual work is that, you know, because if I believe that everyone is inherently noble, regardless of how oppressive an action or thought might be done, there's still this capacity to be able to transform. And you had mentioned earlier, you know, when we spoke, that you needed to work within both to be in such a space like academia that you realized you had to do work within first. And I think that there's this necessity of we have to do the work of excavating that spiritual sense of justice within ourselves first to be able to work within a space that that can be perceived as unjust and oppressive, but there are little tiny points of light still that also strive and yearn for that same kind of degree of justice internally and externally as you do. And like when you mentioned, community matters. To be able to build community with people without trying to carry the labor, you know, that is often perpetuated among like particular groups and peoples, right, to do for the whole institution or the whole system and structure. And I think it's the challenge starts within what can, you know, the frustrations of not feeling that I'm good enough. I'm not. And those are because the physical and material and intellectual obstacles that are thrown at me in terms of you have to be competitive, you have to publish this much, you have to, you know, teach this way, you have to implement these kind of, you know, this kind of curricula, you have to, you know, there's all those kind of, I guess you could say, material or socially kind of informed forms of education, but then there's not the spiritual element. Like, how do I teach the students in the classroom to take care of themselves as well, of each other, and also just how to be better, not just to teach them about education studies or about particular injustices and injustices within education, but how do I teach them also to excavate that justice from within and, you know, and the same with my colleagues. So I think this idea of it begins with the self, and I can be frustrated and upset within working within a system that appears aspiritual because it's so focused on that social, mental, emotional, intellectual, that it means that I haven't done the spiritual work yet to be able to see how I can still work and transform within the space. And I think higher ed, and I'm sure a lot of people would argue any system or structure they work within, is there's a capacity to transform, right? Even my mentor talks, he uses Catherine Malibu's theory of the plasticity of the brain and how the university is plastic and how it also can have this capacity to transform. Mm-hmm. But and adapt, but it requires movement and transformation from within, even starting at the individual level, you know, and then at the community level and then at the institutional level. I don't think it can happen overnight. You know, it seems very idealistic and optimistic to even maybe the way that I'm talking, people like, she's tripping, you know, I don't think it's possible to transform. But it's amazing to see how many scholars and activists and artists moving across and within academic spaces are already shifting the discourse, and not only the discourse, but action, you know, social action in terms of how we're reimagining, revisiting things. It's evolving, it's slow, but there's things that are happening. And I think this idea to be able to see, you know, an institution transform within is just very much indicative in terms of people, individuals, those hearts and minds also transforming within.
The views expressed on this program are those of the host, guests, and callers, and not necessarily those of KKNW, its management, or other advertisers. Contests are the responsibility of the host of this program and not KKNW. This is Alternative Talk 1150 AM, KKNW Seattle, and KNUC 98.9 HD3 Seattle.
And good Wednesday to you, Benny Mathers, here for a look at your Alternative Talk AM 1150 traffic update for around the town. Over on I-5 northbound, just south of the 405, right there around Tukwila South Center Mall area, there's a recent collision partially blocking the two right lanes. Good thing, though, medical aid fire assistance is responding, along with state patrol have arrived on the scene, and they are taking care of those motorists. Stay tuned. Coming up next, after the news and weather, it's another hour of the Transformation Talk Radio Network. This time, it's the Healing Hour with Dr. Sharon Martin. Bridging the mystical and scientific. Medical wheels. Circles. Healing. Stay tuned.
NBC News Radio, I'm Lisa Taylor. The Surgeon General says the time is now for COVID booster shots.
Recent data makes clear that protection against mild and moderate disease has decreased over time. This is likely due to both waning immunity and the strength of the widespread Delta variant.
Dr. Vivek Murthy discussed the plans to distribute the booster shots, making boosters available starting September 20th for those who are 18 years and older and fully vaccinated. Boosters will only be available to those who've received either a Pfizer or Moderna vaccine, as no booster shot has yet been authorized for the single-dose Johnson & Johnson vaccine. The White House is scrambling to get thousands of Americans trapped in Afghanistan out as the crisis there worsens. For now, President Biden is sticking to his plan to get U.S. citizens and Afghan allies out of the country by August 31st as the Taliban takes control. Lawmakers from both parties are urging Biden to extend that deadline, but the Pentagon says it's sticking to the orders given by the commander-in-chief. Thousands of Americans in Afghanistan received a message from the U.S. Embassy in Kabul to begin to move to the airport. But that notice came with a warning in all caps saying, please be advised that the United States government cannot guarantee your security as you make this trip. California's fast-moving Dixie Fire has burned more than 635,000 acres with just 33% containment. Cal Fire reports more than 1,200 structures, including homes, have been destroyed, while another 16,000 are threatened in the Feather River Canyon area of Butte County. The Dixie Fire is now the 14th most destructive wildfire in state history. Gusts of up to 55 miles per hour are expected in some areas. Cal Fire says that could elevate the danger and cause current blazes to spread even further. Grace is now a hurricane. The National Hurricane Center says it's moving toward the Yucatan Peninsula. However, the storm's track does not take it toward the U.S. As for Mexico, the eastern Yucatan Peninsula is expected to see hurricane conditions tonight or early tomorrow. Parts of Mexico's mainland could see those conditions Friday. You're listening to the latest on NBC News Radio.
This Labor Day, put an end to junk sleep. Right now at Mattress Firm, save up to $500 on our top-rated brands when you get a king bed for the price of a queen or a queen for a twin. Plus, get a free adjustable base sleep, spend $699 on Sealy. Or save up to 50% on hot buys from top brands like Sleepy's or Serta. With our highly trained sleep experts and our low-price guarantee, you can rest assured you'll get the best bed at the best price. Unjunk your sleep, only at Mattress Firm. Offer valid with qualifying purchase. Restrictions apply. Valid at participating locations only. For offer details, visit mattressfirm.com/sale.
There are many sides to running a business, and with Square, every side can be connected. So how you sell in person syncs with how you sell online, and how you take payment works with how you pay your team. And when all your tools work together, you can spend more time seeing your bigger picture take shape. See how Square can help connect every side of your business by visiting square.com/go/connect. That's square.com/go/connect.
And let's go ahead and take a look now at your alternative talk weather outlook for Wednesday. Well, we'll see mostly sunny skies today. High temperatures around 76, 77 degrees. Shaping up to be a pretty nice day. Also, a little bit of calm wind out of northwest at 6 to 10 miles per hour. For tonight, mostly clear skies. Low temperatures dropping down to about 61 for Thursday. Mostly sunny skies yet again. High temperatures around the same, 76, 77, maybe 78. Increasing clouds Thursday night, lows down to about 61. For Friday and running up into the weekend, more clouds and a slight chance of rain showers. High temperatures backing off a few degrees into the low 70s, with low temperatures in the upper 50s.
The views expressed on this program are those of the hosts, guests, and callers, and are not necessarily those of KKNW, its management, or other advertisers. This program is sponsored by Dr. Pat Basile and Transformation Talk Radio.
Welcome, everyone. You're listening to Maximum Medicine Radio, The Healing Hour, with me, Dr. Sharon Martin, here on TransformationTalkRadio.com. This is the Hour of Healing Power. In this live call-in show, The Healing Hour, I'm going to take your calls and help you get started on your way to your maximum potential. So come on, settle in, listen up, and I'll take your questions head on. Together, we'll find practical wisdom and understanding about what ails you. In The Healing Hour, we'll start your day off right. Insights and practical health knowledge, a concept for how you really live. I'll take your issue and help guide you with a blend of scientific medicine and the esoteric, including shamanic energy medicine. So let's shake off some of that mystery and get started on how to really live. Together, let's get unstuck. So come on and join in, join up, and let me help, and let go of what holds you back from being the maximum you the world needs. Take down this call-in number, 1-800-930-2819, and let's get started on the Healing Hour right now.
Hi, everybody. I'm Doc Martin. I'm here with Dr. Pat.
Yep.
This is the Healing Hour, part of Maximum Medicine Radio. So what I love about today is I want to show you several concepts that are symbolized and processes that I love to put together when I incorporate Western and shamanic and energy medicine. And these are things that are teachable. These different aspects are teachable, which I will teach you. I'm writing a book, and so it'll be in that, but we can talk about that today. And my thinking is, when you look at something, any problem, and you bring in ideas from different arenas, a little of this, a little of that, a little of this, what you get is a building of the power. If you just stick to one-track mind, you kind of get a one-track answer. So we're going to build some concepts today, which I really love that. So, Pat, I like that because we're all about mixing and matching to get the most we can, aren't we?
Yeah. And, you know, what I love about this, Sharon, if I could jump in, Dr. Sharon Martin, for those of you out there, this is about the Healing Hour, and that's why we give out the phone number. Because when we open up a show like this and you get the opportunity to work with Doc Martin live, what you're going to get
not only is the essence of what we're talking about, and for those of you on Facebook, this is really a visual dream to see how all this comes together, this body of work. But when you call into the show today, ask yourself the question, do I understand what the energies of life are for me right now? What are the elements I'm bringing in? Am I bringing in earth, air, fire, water? And then the question then becomes, you know, if I can think about that, you know, what is the direction that I'm most aligned with? You know, at one point in my life, Dr. Martin, you know, one point in my life, I was so aligned with the West. It was very clear to me that that was part of my energy. And the question is, what am I aligned to now? What are the energies I bring in? And then when we look at another perspective, we're looking at how do we show up in the world? You know, I'm not a literal person, but at times like this morning, I had to be. But at one time today, I saw what Doc Martin has created in literal, emotional, energetic, and spiritual. And when we take a look at perspectives and then we put them together with the process she uses, where if you look at maximum medicine at its best, and the amplification of how we are today and who we want to become. We are not unidimensional beings. And what you're about to hear in today's show, in the illustrations of the Chicana, the beautiful work Jamie did, you're going to see this on Facebook at Transformation Talk, Facebook Transformation Talk Radio, is that we are not unidimensional beings. We have multiple dimensions, and we have dimensions of ourselves that you can't see. But in this show today, you're going to be presented with how Doc Martin has brought this together in the spirit of maximum medicine for your healing. So if today you're wondering, how am I doing today? What's really going on with me? You would like Doc Martin to pinpoint that, but then also to talk to you. You know, maybe you need to bring more of the energy of change in the West in. Maybe you need to have less fire and more earth today. I don't even mention water because I don't even know what water is. But that's what today's show is. We're going to show you how all of these elements that Dr. Sharon Martin has brought together under what we're calling multiple maximum medicine wheels. And you will see for the first time ever, and I want to say this, there is nothing that has ever been created like this. This is Dr. Sharon Martin getting this insight, bringing it together in a way that we've not seen it. And lastly of what I want to say is when you're looking at this, how do all of these play out with parts of the body, with the chakra system? When you see what we're talking about today and the body of work that you will be introduced to today and how to work with Sharon directly on this, this is groundbreaking. That's what I want to say about today's show, Doc Martin.
Well, that's very kind. Thank you. My take on it, and I'm probably a little less enthusiastic about the excitement that Dr. Patsy, because to me, none of these concepts, they're not my original concepts. They belong to the body of work of the spirituality and mysticism that's gone on for centuries. But the way I see them and the way I put them together, I like it when something's simple and understandable. I like it when an ordinary person can do it. You don't have to be a monk. You don't have to be a shaman in the Andes. You don't have to be in a sweat lodge in the Southwest United States. These are things that you can, each of us can do. And I'm all about finding the things that each of us can do that get us thinking bigger and broader and amplifying our life in a good way. So I like that.
Yeah. And we didn't send the memo out that said we were going to wear some kind of animal print today, did we? I mean, because what am I showing up with?
My gosh.
Right.
We're leoparding it.
People think like we sent a memo to each other and say, oh, man, like you got to wear a leopard thing today. No.
You know what? Here's what's even more
funny.
Woo-woo is in the Andean tradition, the West direction is associated with the jaguar. So Pat said she was very West. Well, we're wearing leopard jaguar prints. So how about that?
Oh, my God.
So,
but, you know, take it away because you are modest. And I know that everything you've put together is based on ancient wisdom. But no one has put it together the way you're about to demonstrate today. This is new. I mean, maybe somebody has, but I don't know. Like in about 12,000 interviews, I've not seen it. So this is why the world is saying, Dr. Sharon Martin, you've got to bring a new narrative to the table because the narrative we have is not working.
And the medicine, if we talk about Western medicine today, the Western medicine today is broken, deeply broken. Broken in many ways that engage people at the heart level, although technically Western medicine is brilliant. Technically, surgically, using particular chemicals for antibodies for treatment of cancers, and it's brilliant, but it's lost our hearts and souls along the way. And people reluctantly go and get a treatment when they really need it, but they kind of wish they didn't have to.
Yeah.
I can't tell you how many people say, I'm here and I never go to the doctor, I don't like to come. And I say to them, I'm with you. I completely agree. So anyway, I want to talk just briefly before we cut to break.
Sure.
Western medicine is scientifically brilliant, but it left behind, and what actually we're scrambling nationally to do is it left behind the patient-centeredness. It left behind the ability for a patient to have power over their own health. Shamanic medicine is ancient, at least 35,000 years old. And by the way, that's before that's before the chakras were actually talked about. The chakras were talked about around 1500 BC. And if it's okay, we'll skip the break and keep going.
Rock on.
Rock on. All right. So, rocking on.
Yeah, now, that's a shamanic term, don't you think?
Stone people on. Anyway, Western medicine, scientifically brilliant, kind of lost something. It does not favor intuition. It doesn't reward physicians for their intuition. It says nothing about a healer holding an intention for a patient, although some doctors do that without probably knowing that they're doing it. Shamanic medicine, ancient, the oldest form of healing in our history as humans. It is very connected to the forces of the earth because people were very dependent on knowing how to escape the rain, the wind, the fire. And it has transformative approaches using the forces of the earth. In Mongolian shamanism, I think I'm going to say this right, there are 55 forces that are considered of the black, and that doesn't mean negative, and a 44 tengers, or these connecting to these forces, for the white. So they have, that's a lot of connections that a shaman has to do with his or her consciousness. Shamanism, unfortunately, doesn't have any tradition that we can, written tradition that we can learn from. So we're scrambling to bring those. And that's what Dr. Alberto Villoldo does so beautifully, is he was told by an Andean elder, we used to pass this information down generation to generation, shaman to apprentice. We can't do that anymore. This is critical information that needs to get out there. So Alberto was tasked with putting together the teachings and getting them worldwide quickly, which he did, and he's a genius. It's his soul path, and he was divinely guided through this, I believe. So shamanic medicine has ancient power, It doesn't talk about physiology. It doesn't talk about chakras, although in my conversations, which right now are just beginning with a Mongolian shaman, I'm going to try to sort out how do you actually see the energy field. And then you have energetic medicine, which it thrills everybody. The idea, like in Reiki, of doing an attunement or an activation, it feels good to go into the heart space and offer energy. But it needs more, shall I say, quality control, and it needs to have certain steps and be taught. And right now, it's not really standardized. But those are all very powerful abilities for healing, and I think that's what we're going to do in the future, hopefully sooner rather than later, is pull those all together.
Go ahead.
You know,
what you've done today, Sharon, and sooner rather than later, we're actually going to do it today. You know, one of the things we're actually going to introduce today is, and let's just call it, months and months and years of your experience where you have brought it all together, right? And what you've done in bringing it together, though, is you're presenting it in a way that when we look at it and when Janie presents it, you know, people will get a sense of how we really are operating, how these things are operating all the time.
Mm-hmm.
Look, I had a moment this morning. It was an interesting moment, and I looked at what we were presenting today. I always prepare for the show, right? And I caught myself in the moment, and I hope when Jamie does play this, I get insight to where on the dynamic of this where I was. It was a really interesting moment for me. We have a lot of things happening. A lot of them are really great. But we go through transitions, and, you know, one of our producers is moving on, and we certainly are going to backfill it. And I've got three amazing producers. It's a great team of people. And you put that all together, right? And it's exciting. But, you know, there are changes that have to be made. And some of these are hard decisions to make. And I have a really interesting approach. And I haven't talked to Jamie yet, so she's hearing us the first time. But with new assignments for people, I like to sit down and talk with them, you know, and say, how does this work for you? Now, ultimately, I'll have to make the decision. But I have to move at record speed. And so sometimes at record speed, when you're moving forward, you know, not all the energies are aligned with your enthusiasm. But I have great producers, and I have people so willing to change. Parallel to this is looking at our new technology and getting a message to date, like a one-liner, Sharon, from Merrick, our programmer, like a one-liner, because I asked him to update the data on the development. So it's a one-liner, and it says, I will migrate data, this is code now, from TTR2 to TTR3, and you're in the middle of your energy of change, and you're in the middle of your energy of flux. And I'm not sure on the wheel where that is or how things are being pulled in, but I looked at it to try to assess this. So when Jamie shows this, I am going to be very interested in seeing the movement of this, because I want to be able to pinpoint where my energy was. And then somebody said something to me today, and I took it so personally, and my energy changed. This is not just me. Every day we are faced with this. People are going to work now under conditions that they are expected to operate normal. And so what you put together is, how does our everyday world, you see, how does what's happening,
yeah,
how do we understand who we are in everyday world? That message from Merrick was so significant and important, and it didn't register in my brain until I was looking and preparing for the show, and it hit me out of nowhere what that meant. There are four stages to our deployment of our new technology. The fourth one doesn't have to be ready. So what he's saying in one line, where he doesn't say, yahoo, you know, like we're here, basically he's saying, yahoo, we're here. And so this, to me, is important in what you're presenting. And so let's get on with it. Because if we can understand these moments of time where we are in an energy that's not getting us to a place of healing or a place of understanding or a place of empathy, if we can understand the mechanics of this and literally move the parts on the wheel, holy cow, then what? You're going to tell us then what today?
Right. So I think what you're coming to, Pat, is what I want to show. Jamie, if you'll put up the Chicana picture, the plain Chicana. This symbol of the Andes is ancient, and it holds important wisdom that's really in our psyches. It's in our ancestral memories. This is, in the basis of it, a four-sided cross, like all crosses, I guess, are four-sided. But to me, what it shows is if you were to go clockwise, as I do in all of my wheels that we're going to show today, this is how I see symbolically any journey we undertake. I always start my journeys in the south direction, which is 6 o'clock on the circle, moving around. And when I see a person's journey, as yours is, Pat, for your company, for TTR, and for a person's healing, you improve a little, and then you integrate. There's a platform. You improve a little, plateau. Improve a little, integrate, improve a little. And the whole, if you can think symbolically and hold that meaning, all of us go through journeys of any sort, kind of stuttering a little bit, but we're moving. The Chicana of the movement of that is a very sacred image. And what I love about that image is it brings an ancient wisdom. The Chicana also has a hole in the center that, from more of a New Age perspective, it's been referred to as the portal to another dimension. So we talk about wanting to move lightning fast. Well, we can move around step by step by step, or we can quantum leap into something new. So I love the basis of that diagram. I love the flow that it shows. I love the journey that it implies by its symbology. So what that Chicana also brings is the concept of a medicine wheel. Now, let's hold in our minds just a plain wheel. In the Native American tradition, a medicine wheel was the mythic journey of a warrior. The south direction was a fear that was faced. The west, the south was an awareness of a problem. The west was facing your fear. The north, we got some wisdom, usually from a power animal, your allies, the ancestors, the universe. And the east, you saw things with a new way. So in effect, as you moved around, you improved. So to me, those symbols are how I see a person's healing journey. So Pat, just a quick aside, do we want to break or keep rolling?
I want to keep rolling to the bottom. Let's keep rolling.
Okay. So I like to think of things in many different concepts that I layer. And Jamie, if you'll put up the wheel of the elements. This is Chinese medicine, but I don't do traditional Chinese medicine, which is brilliant. But to me, the elements, which are starting at the south direction, fire, water at the west, earth at the north, air at the east, these are symbolic and real. And what I love about it, it's used in Celtic shamanism. It's used in Native American. It's used in many, many cultures. But when I think about this in terms of healing, I think about the body and those elements, and are they in or out of balance? So let's take fire for a minute. If somebody comes in with an inflamed joint that's red and hot, that's kind of an obvious excess of fire. Maybe you have too little fire. If we talk about metabolism, maybe your thyroid's underactive. Let's talk then about water. Well, obviously, if you have congestive heart failure, you've got too much water going on. That's an excess. You have a blister from poison ivy, a little too much water localized. Maybe you're urinating a lot, which is how the doctor finds out you have diabetes. Let's take earth for a minute. I see earth in the body as things that are very grounded, solid, sometimes immovable. So if you've had rheumatoid arthritis for years and your joints are deformed, and even though they're not hot and on fire, you're locked in, you may have too much earth. So these are just thoughts in my head. Again, as I said, they're not brilliant, unique, wow, great things. They're things that are out there already. But use what's there and use what you can get and apply it. So how do you as a person connect with the elements? I think you should sit in meditation, think about the element, and just write a list. What does it mean to you? How does that feel to you? What's too much of it? What's too little? In one of my spiritual classes I did years ago, we wrote poems about each element. That really gets you in the feeling. So that is how I see the wheel of elements. And I can teach disease process in that. So I love that. So then the other thing, and Pat was talking about perspectives. Jamie, would you put up the wheel of perspectives? So the perspectives are, this is, and Alberto teaches this brilliantly in his Four Winds training. And many New Age books give you this statement. I haven't researched it to find the original, so I don't know exactly if it's word to word. But the statement, the New Age philosophy is, a problem cannot be solved from the same level at which it was created. Apparently that's attributed to Albert Einstein.
Yeah.
I don't know that he exactly said it that way.
He said it differently, but he meant it the same way.
So in other words, diving in to the place where the problem exists as you see it right now just gives you solution inside that cave that you just dived into. You have to change the way you come at it. Now, how does that apply, before I get to the perspectives, how does that apply in medicine? In Western medicine, we're taught if you look at something that's happening, keep in your mind something we call a differential diagnosis. That means you have a list of different things that this could be. You don't just lock yourself in, because when you lock yourself in, like any that you do, you are limited. So don't lock yourself in. See it broader. Think bigger. Stretch your mind to come up with other ways to explain what's happening. So when Alberto talked about it, he's talking about activating not only a way of thinking, but it comes with it with an energy. So we're talking about perspectives that bring to it a different feeling, a different capacity. So, and again, these wheels are put in the direction that they're linked to. Alberto links the literal to the south, the emotional to the west, the energetic or mythic to the north, and the spiritual, or he calls that the energetic, but to the east. So what does it mean to have a literal perspective? That's when it is what it is. The surface of something is bumpy. The road ahead of me has a block. Everything is concrete and has no overlay of anything else. Well, how does that apply in disease? So for me, if you're constantly feeling yourself as part of your disease process, you recite the same, my back, let's take back pain. I can't bend. It hurts when I bend over. I can't sit down. And that's all you say all the time. You're locking yourself into that literal energy of your disease. Mm. And Pat, you can probably relate when you think about back when you had Lyme.
Yeah. Yeah. I think the thing that helped me, Sharon, is exactly what you're talking about. Now, let's mention this and then go to break. The thing that I'm really referencing in what you're talking about is something I had to learn. You know, I love these quotes. I love that Einstein quote, and I actually did some history on that Einstein quote, you know, a little bit deeper. And you know what, you know, look, everybody thinks they know what he was talking about, but what if he was talking about you can't solve the problem at the level it was created, meaning we can't solve the problem at the level of our earth skin? You know, what if the problem that you want to solve can't be solved by picking up your fingers or hands or doing something within yourself? What if you had to call on another dimension to do it? We now call that spirituality. And we all know that, you know, both him and Jung especially has written in an unknown letter, had talked about he wished he could have done more and talked about spiritual experience more. So here we have brilliant beings that really held back, hinted around that there's another dimension, and here you are today saying there is another dimension, but this is how it fits into healing. And you're right. I can't do it today. But we have something in progress. I created characters, cartoon characters, to educate people about Lyme. They're anime. And so you're right. I had to take a different perspective about it, but I had to learn a little bit more, and I had to change my thinking about it. There are stories of people, Sharon, that can shift on the wheel the way you're talking about it, that have been given terminal illnesses and are still here today. When we come back, wait till you see how the dynamic of this can work. Wait till you see how the process of maximum medicine, when you put it all together, is not just about healing the physical state of you. But in today's moment, I had a moment of clarity in the multidimensional things that were happening all at once today. I had this moment of clarity, and it's because I started to look at the dimensions Sharon's talking about. And I said, you know, I think I need to shift this to fire. Well, I don't know if that's true. I hope I'm not doing the wrong thing. Let's take a short break.
All right, we'll be back in a minute.
Let's take a short break. We'll be right back.
Yes.
What?
You don't need to wait until the new year to set new goals for yourself. Hi, I'm Joan Marlowe, the host of Awareness to Action, and I'm taking this concept to a whole new level. I've developed a program to take your awareness to action in 90 days. Let me introduce you to your day one. Day one can start any day you choose. So why not now? We will use powerful brainstorming, mastermind, visioning, and goal-setting techniques to open your awareness of what you really want in your life and take action with intention to get there. Choose to work with me one-on-one or in a small group. Let's connect, lift each other up, and hold each other accountable. I'm offering a free consult to design your program. Visit my site, peacefulhealing.com, to connect with me, and let's find out when your day one will begin.
Did you know that when we talk about the Earth's ecosystems, the most important ecosystem has been left out? You. We created the ecosystem approach to recapture human potential.
Find us at theecosystemapproach.org.
Join us every Monday at 1 p.m. Pacific Time and 4 p.m. Eastern Time for the Ecosystem Approach Show with Jason and Patricia on TransformationTalkRadio.com.
Hi, I'm Carrie Nail from Nailed It Radio. Understanding our personality preferences can be huge in conquering miscommunication with others. For example, people who prefer to take in information through their five senses tend to see things in practical detail. And people who prefer to take in information intuitively see patterns in the big picture. And so a great strategy for those who prefer sensing is to group detailed thoughts and written communication into three headlines so as not to overwhelm the intuitive person with too many details. And people who prefer intuition should be direct, don't assume, and take time to group random big ideas into three groups so as not to overwhelm the sensing person with vague possibilities. I specialize in helping people understand these differences so you can take them into every aspect of your life to thrive. For more information, you can visit my website, KerriNail.com. That's KerriNail.com.
Life can be demanding, but sometimes our wheels are spinning and we're too focused on making them turn to notice we're stuck in the mud. Tune into The Pause with me, Ellen Wyoming Deloy, every second and fourth Tuesday at 9 a.m. Pacific on Transformation Talk Radio. Learn how to stop, reflect, and start moving forward with intention. And if you're really looking to jumpstart your personal development, schedule a free coaching consultation with me at ellenwyomingdeloy.com.
Are you ready to experience full body system wellness? Tune in to the Empower Me Show with Pam Bright, a spiritual toolbox for your life. Embrace the fullness of who you are as a spiritual being, having a human experience. Pam Bright is a multidimensional healer, light language channel, energy intuitive, and spiritual transformation coach. Join her for a rich conversation about how to unlock all your spiritual gifts. Mondays at 3 p.m. Pacific on Transformation Talk Radio.
Everybody, welcome back. This is a special, special edition of the Healing Hour. Dr. Sharon Martin, this is her show, Bridging the Mystical and the Scientific. Today, Medicine Wheels, Circles of Healing. And if you want to find out more about Sharon, Dr. Sharon Martin, go to drsharon.com. Check out her website. This is a time if you would like her to create something special for you, if you would like a healing session, if you would like to talk to her about any elements of your life you want to change, you know, what's working for you, what's not, you know, this is where you go to do it. Please let her know about that. You can also call her at 833-940-1882. Today, you're getting introduced to something that has not been shared yet, and it's exciting. And we're talking about an approach that takes all of what goes on with us and puts it in a new perspective. It brings in the elements, the directions, the perspective, and it also brings in the process she uses for maximum medicine, which is aware, allow, act, and affirm. So this is an exciting moment, Doc Martin.
It is. These wheels, what I love about them is it can activate inside each person a thinking and a reflecting of where you are on your journey and it, your balance. So the mythical journey of the south, west, north, and east, the balance of your elements as they relate to your physical body, your energy body, your emotional body. And now we're talking about the balance of perspective. And I just want to finish that wheel up before we move to the next. Each illness or health challenge comes with an emotional perspective. And I hear that often, and sometimes it's hard when the patient is sitting in front of you to get past oh my gosh, I hurt. I'm so this. I just, nothing's working. Everything is out of whack for them, and that they're in the emotional experience of that. And my goal is, as any physician or provider's goal, is to really find the other parts. So the other, as you're going around the circle, every time you have any kind of challenge or task in front of you, it has all these possibilities of perspective. The next is, I call, Alberto calls it the mythic, I call it the energetic, in the sense that how does this affect your soul, your soul's journey? And in other words, can you rise above your problem and see, you know, if I hadn't had this back pain, I wouldn't have reassessed the fact that I'm constantly rushing to do things. I don't sit and reflect. I need to take more time, time as a basic thing to stretch, but time to ask myself, mm-hmm. why am I pushing? Why am I constantly pushing this rock up the hill? Who is that guy? Who is the guy who pushes the rock up the hill?
I don't know, but that's all of us.
Some Greek guy, and I'm
with a Greek guy, but it's basically all of us, pretty much every day. You know,
in the east direction is what I call the spiritual. Alberto calls it the energetic. To me, the energetic is how spirit reaches you. If you can get out of your right now. There's a lot of literal world distress and emotional distress over Afghanistan.
Yeah,
move yourself, if you're able, move yourself over to turning it over to spirit. I have no solutions for Afghanistan. I cannot control it. I can't help it. It breaks my heart. But I've got to trust that spirit's going to find a way. You know, maybe the Afghanis are finally going to say enough is enough and be empowered to do something. I don't know. I can't pretend to know. And by the way, Benny just reminded me that when you push the rock, you're very Sisyphus is the guy. Very Sisyphus.
Thank you, Benny.
Thank you, Benny.
Thank you, Benny.
So looking at where you are on your circle in terms of where are your perspectives? Are you seeing everything literally, or can you take it over here? Can you see, rise above yourself and see this as part of your soul journey? Maybe you need to learn the pain of something in order to grow and not be like that anymore. Just a thought. So, Jamie, if you'll put up the wheel of interaction. So here's the other thing. I thought about in any process I try to teach a person, a patient, I need them to first be aware of the issue, be really clear on the issue. Not just, I can't bend over, but really clear on all of the components of a back pain. I need them to then be able to allow a change. If you are so stuck in your beliefs that you see no potential for change, it's not going to change. So you need to allow that there is a possibility of something different. When I talk about this shamanically and energetically, which are both spiritual approaches, can you allow help from forces outside yourself? Can you allow God to step in? Can you allow your power animal to step in? Can you allow something bigger than yourself to help? So that we're moving again. You're growing in your ability to tackle this problem. Then you get to act. The way I see it, the next thing is, then you've got this, well, in the allowing and in the aware, and the aware, by the way, is an intuitive as well. Now I know what I'm going to try to do different. Now I know the actions I'm going to take. And then the affirm to me is you climb the step on the chicana and now you're on the plateau. When you affirm it, you lock those into your daily life. You anchor in the new thought. You anchor in the new way of being, the new action. So you're affirming that you learned everything that you were supposed to learn, and you're saying, I can do this now. When you do that, you have indeed this circle also, in effect, is rising to another level and then another level. So even though it's a circle that comes back around, it really is different than where it started. It's really movement through space and time.
Mm-hmm.
So I love that part of the interactions. And then I also think about, what are the inner tasks? Where is the person in their ability to take some tasks that I might share with them? Do they have intuition about it? Are they able to amplify? In other words, can they pull in different things to really, really get, again, just like maximum medicine, bring in all the pieces? And when you bring in all the pieces and your intuition, you can set a really powerful intention. And when you set a powerful intention, you are arrow to your target, and your target is a healed outcome, talking about medicine. You can have an intention for something else, but you've now maximized the potency of that intention so that your goal is achievable. And then you bring it to ritual. And again, ritual to me is like affirming it. It's also the spiritual direction. Bring it to ritual to lock it in. So you've done, these are inner tasks that you've done, and you bring it to ritual. And I've taught people that as in patients in daily medicine, I've taught people, take this to the altar. Take this outside and do this particular connection with the natural world. Take it to a fire ceremony. So those are my wheels. And Pat, do you want to say anything before we go to like the grand?
Yeah. What I want to say to everyone is that, you know, when you relate to this on the basis that we're talking about this now, what you have is the elements and ways to figure out what the heck's going on with me. You know, where am I? What is the energies that I'm feeling right now? And then what you're also talking about, this is how we can make a shift. This is how we can change the wheel. And that was really the moment for me this morning. And I was joking during the break. In addition to that really cool little one-line message that nobody else around here got excited about, Jessica didn't even get excited about, you know, I decided I was going to celebrate that. You know, I was going to celebrate that. And what I realized was that there's a reason nobody else here is going to get as excited about it as me, because this has been such a gift that was given to me along the way. During my illness, by the way, Doc Martin, and I respect the integrity of that. And sometimes
so let's bring this back for just a second.
Sure.
Jamie, pull up, if you would, the perspective. So your illness, Lyme disease, you started off, you were locked in the literal. You hurt, you couldn't move, your joints.
Immediately.
And out of that, again, with different things that happened and things that you put in, you moved around to a creative force that is over here between the energetic and spiritual, and you move that circle in a very big, life-changing way.
Yeah.
And not only congratulations to you, and let's honor that, but that's what any person can do. We can shift the dynamic journey of our lives, and that's what I'm all about. Let's shift the suckers.
Yeah, because you can create, and, you know, this is not a show on Lyme disease. And for those of you out there, I do have a show on Lyme disease, and we have had to pull that show on Lyme disease because of the platform. Once we go to this new, from TTR2 to TTR3 thing, is we'll have our own platform. We'll be able to talk about Lyme disease in ways that, you know, some of the networks don't want us to talk about it. You know, the issues right now is why isn't insurance covering Lyme disease? Hello. But you're right about that. Mm-hmm. Had I not made that shift and had help, I had, Sharon, this happened
6 months after I started my first show. This mm-hmm. happened, my first show in 2003, April 1st of 2004, giving it a workshop on living your greatest dreams, and by the time I was done, my ankle was the size of like a large grapefruit close to a soccer ball. And that began the mystery disease. Now, another show we can talk about how do you go from that to finding out, but it's all related to what you're showing today. Because if I didn't make the adjustment, I wouldn't have pursued a conversation with the angel lady, which led me to Dr. Darvish, which led me to become a Lyme disease advocate, to set up Lyme Talk Radio. I actually have a Lyme website. But none of that would have happened in the literal, I don't believe.
No, and you were able to see the potential of a journey and move it along. So that's what I love about this. So these wheels are ways that each person can see any challenge. These are, from my perspective, about a health challenge. Jamie, let's put up the non-animated composite, if you would. When you layer these circles around the chicana, again, these are symbols of a journey, an inner journey, an action journey, a way of seeing things. You get a dynamo ability to accumulate so many different pieces that you have to work with, because again, the power comes in layering multiple things. The power comes in being open to do all these new things together. And then again, since we do not live in a static world, because our lives are dynamic, because our journeys are dynamic, these things in any time are actually moving. And Jamie, if you'll put up the animated one. So you can be in any place, any way each circle moves, multiple combinations. You're not locked to one place on the board. You have different spirals going, wheels going at different times. You may be in this part of this wheel, but this part of this wheel, and things are moving. And the beauty of this is this is a symbology and a way of feeling into it and seeing it, that if you utilize this, you can bring forth for yourself a deeper level of awareness and mm-hmm. subsequent healing.
Mm-hmm.
So I think these pieces are beautiful when they're layered together.
Mm-hmm. And I want to say something about the layers for people that are watching on Facebook really quickly. The model that you're seeing everything move at one time. But the real model and the way it works, and this will be coming, is each of the inner circles are also moving. And they're not always moving together. And you'll be able to see the dynamic nature of sometimes how they each move and give you a different alignment and what you can do to change it. This morning for me, I was so grounded in earthly things, and I had to take a moment to get fired up about a single line Trello message from my programmer.
Right.
And you know, there's an energy that we have to honor in that, Sharon. And, you know, to me, when I prepped for the show and I saw that, it was a reminder. See, that's what I want to say about this. And we're going to talk about this more in future shows. But congratulations to you on what you just created. And, Jamie, thank you for the beautiful, beautiful,
beautiful
representations
beautiful.
Of that. And for those of you that are listening, this show is on Facebook.com, Transformation Talk Radio. You can go in and see this for yourself.
Yeah. And what I also like,
a fire moment for you too.
what I also like about this is it's kind of like planets. The orbits don't all happen in the same speed and the same direction. These wheels move at their own, and each person's wheels move in at a different time. So this can be very individualized, and I hope that it as I teach it in my book, I hope that it's very useful to expand your way of thinking about something, to expand your perceptions and the possibilities that can come. That's what I love about it. This just blows it open to use these ancient concepts bring them all together and use them for your expansion, which is what I love.
You know, let's take a peek ahead in the few minutes we have left. We're going to be talking more about these, and certainly your upcoming book is really going to blow this out of the water. But when we look at all these together, please tell us your personal message about your vision for this and helping people.
So the whole point of the book is I've spent 20 years learning things that are not unique to me, that are not esoteric, that no, you know, they're available to anybody. And I've spent 20 years bringing them together in my way of thinking. So my goal is to teach what I've learned as the way I see it. And it may not be as fancy as someone else's approach. It may not be as authentic. My elements are certainly not authentic traditional Chinese medicine. My Andean stuff is not as beautiful as Alberto will teach it, but it's accessible. And that's what I want you guys to have, is an accessible way to make changes so that you can be maximum.
Thank you for listening to Maximum Medicine Radio, The Healing Hour, with me, Dr. Sharon Martin, on TransformationTalkRadio.com. We're going to be together the third Wednesday of each month at 11 a.m. Pacific for candid, honest conversations to help you change the way you think about healing, about yourself, about your life. Did you hear your answer on the show? Well, I will be with you next month, ready for all your questions, from energy medicine to traditional healing and beyond. Healing is flow, movement, and destination. But are you stuck? What is your true destiny like? Listen in, call in, to let the world know. Together, we'll choose what brings you into healing and let you call in all the power of the universe to act on your behalf. Reclaim your path. To learn more about me, Doc Martin, and Maximum Medicine, The Healing Hour, visit www.drsharonmartin.com. See you all next time.